It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning gonna keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time in Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline, and it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Golzine takes the snap.
Pass intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now, here's your host, John Schmelt.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. Giants Talk with you for the next hour, hour and a half right here on Giants.com. But before we get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513 and comments on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat, we are going to bring in the one and only Rob Rang. He will give us our final look at the Giants draft class from our myriad of draft experts. We saved the best for last. He's one of the best in the business. Rob, good morning. Good to talk to you. How was your little week respite from all this NFL draft nonsense?
It's been spectacular. Have a little bit of time off from the draft nonsense, as you said. I hope that yours has been wonderful as well.
Yes, it has, Rob. Now, obviously, they can find your mock drafts and some of your stories on CBS Sports. Where else can they find your work if they want to see what Rob has planned for 2015's NFL draft?
Well, you mentioned the big spot. I mean, go to CBSSports.com and the NFL draft coverage. That's going to essentially be me and my cohort, Dane Brugler. And as you mentioned, we're already looking towards the 2015 draft. We have a mock draft up there now. We have my top 32 prospects for fans out there who are already looking forward to the college and NFL football seasons coming up. And of course, all my reviews and rankings of the 2014 class as well. You can also can follow me on Twitter at Rob Rang.
You got it, 100%. A great follow. And Rob, let's get right to it here with the New York Football Giants. I'll get to your overall take on their class a little bit later, but let's go pick by pick here. First round, they decide to go with Odell Beckham Jr. It's somebody that I think we talked about as a sleeper possibility for the Giants, but they did decide to take him with Aaron Donald on the board, with Zach Martin on the board. Your thoughts on Odell Beckham Jr.?
Well, I think it's just a statement of the fact that we knew that the Giants had adding some kind of weapons for Eli Manning as a significant priority. And I think that a lot of the buzz was around the tight end, Eric Ebron, as well as offensive line. But once you put into account that the Giants had spent as much as they had on young, talented offensive linemen throughout free agency, and we really started to focus in on a little bit more of the skill position players. And certainly Clemson's Sammy Watkins, or I should say the Buffalo Bills' Sammy Watkins, Mike Evans, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, are certainly extraordinary talents. But Odell Beckham was a receiver that was getting top receiver grades from some clubs. I had a number of teams that told me that they thought that he was the sleeper to wind up in the top 10. It really surprised some people. So I think that he is a solid value selection for the New York Giants. He's a dynamic playmaker, whether it be an inside, outside receiver, as well as on special teams, of course. We made a lot of his best big plays for the LSU Tigers. I think that he gives the Giants another dynamic weapon for Eli Manning, already complementing what they have in the fold with Victor Cruz and Reuben Randall specifically.
Now, this might be an impossible question to answer since these guys have been analyzed ad nauseum, but can you tell me something that maybe Giant fans might not know about Odell Beckham Jr.?
Well, just the fact that the consistent improvement that he showed throughout his career. You know, while LSU, even as a true freshman, you rarely see guys who are so athletic that at 18 years old they stand out against the myriad of talent that they are facing, not only against their teammates, but, of course, in the SEC. And that's exactly what Beckham did. And then to see him improve in terms of his route running and just the reliability of his hands throughout his career, to me, that is the defining characteristic of Beckham. The combination of just pure athletic ability, not just speed, but quickness, elusiveness as well, vision. But so that combination of athletic traits plus the work ethic that he showed throughout his career, really taking the next step in Ken Cameron's pro-style offense the last two seasons.
Well, Rob, I want to kind of bounce off two things you said there. I'll hit this one first. You mentioned a hard worker. Now, I heard we had Tony Pauline on a couple weeks ago, I guess it was now, or last week, discussing the Giants draft prospects. And there was some talk about maybe, you know, there were some issues during the week in terms of him maybe showing up on game day but not being 100% in practice every day and going out there and, you know, being the most active guy in practice during the week. His bench press reps at the combine weren't exactly stellar. What have you heard about his work ethic in terms of working in the weight room, showing up at practice every day, and putting in an honest day's work during the week, not just on game day?
Well, I've heard that was definitely a bit of a concern early in his career.
Okay.
He was very much a player who had, you know, got by on his athletic ability. But that as he matured, then that became very much more of a focus. And I think that is why you saw the greater consistency in terms of his route running and catching the football. So it's something that, that frankly, I think we see a lot of players struggle with when they're thrust into the spotlight the way that Odell Beckham was early in his career. There are going to be some questions about work ethic, but really what's impressive is the fact that every single year he got better in that regard, and that's why I expect that to continue, especially when you have a no-nonsense coach like Tom Coughlin.
I heard Dave Gettleman on Sirius NFL Radio the other day call him the best route runner in this year's draft. You've mentioned that at least two or three times already during this interview. Do you think that's a fair statement based on what you're hearing from other NFL clubs? And because of that, do you think he's going to be able to step in to the NFL here and be a pretty effective wide receiver from day one?
I don't know that I would characterize him as the best route runner. In my opinion, that would be Wisconsin's Jared Aberderis.
Okay.
Perhaps even Beckham's former teammate, Jarvis Landry. But neither Aberderis nor Landry have Beckham's first-step acceleration. And so that what that says to me is that he has a higher upside as a route runner. He's not already reached his potential in that regard. And so to answer your question in a roundabout way, I very much expect him to be able to come in and contribute immediately. And I expect that in year two and year three, as you might expect for a wide receiver, that he's going to be much, much more effective at that point than he is immediately.
We're joined by Rob Rang, CBS Sports, their lead NFL draft analyst. And Rob, let's go to the second round here with the Giants now. They go with a relatively safe pick, someone they thought at least was the best center on the board, I guess, from team to team, either him or Marcus Martin, were 1 and 2. Flip-flop him any way you want. Seems like a guy that should be able to step in day one, challenge J.D. Walton for that starting job, and be an anchor on this offensive line for a decade.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is one of the better football players in the draft class. It's just the fact that he came from Colorado State and has a name like Weston Richburg that people don't necessarily, created a bunch of buzz about him. But he is intelligent. He is athletic. Much more athletic than people want to give him credit for, frankly. And he's durable. I mean, he's exactly what you're looking for on the offensive line. He's a four-year starter, has been effective throughout his entire career. I think that he was, in my opinion at least, he doesn't have the athletic upside that former USC center Marcus Martin has. But there's a reason why Martin went essentially 50 picks later. And that is because, at least in my opinion, Weston Richburg was clearly the top center in this draft class. And so I didn't necessarily anticipate that the Giants were going to be taking an interior offensive lineman as early as they did because, as I mentioned before, they were so aggressive in undrafted free agency. But to me, this is a very solid, very safe pick, a guy who is going to come into the NFL. I believe he's going to be the longest-term starter of any of the Giants draft picks. And a guy who I have no doubt can play at the NFL level early in his career. Again, it's a little bit of a tip of the cap to the Giants that they are looking to really fortify their offensive line rather than just patch it up as they did in free agency.
Rob, one complaint I've gotten from some Giant fans about this draft is that they didn't draft somebody at the tight end position. Now, I know that at the second round pick, only two guys are off the board, Eric Ebron and Austin Seferian Jenkins. Do you think there was a tight end that gave the Giants enough value in that second round that would make them a better pick than, say, a Weston Richburg?
You know, I really don't. And I look at this tight end class, and it had so much buzz about it early on, John. I mean, there were all these underclassmen were making the jump. And, you know, maybe Troy Nicholas from Notre Dame, who wound up going a couple of picks later to the Arizona Cardinals, and he's a really good football player. I mean, he's a heck of a blocker. He's a developing receiver, but he doesn't have much speed, and there were some very legitimate medical concerns about him. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if Troy Nicholas doesn't play much as a rookie with the Arizona Cardinals.
Really?
So knowing that,
interesting.
So knowing that, I could see why the Giants and a number of other clubs elected to, you know, perhaps take, you know, obviously take another player at that spot. And I'll tell you what, the University of Southern California undrafted free agent the Giants got, Xavier Grimble, he is a player that a number of teams had as a draft-worthy prospect. He didn't have the big junior season that perhaps a lot of people expected him to have, but hey, when you lose a quarterback like Nat Barkley, Marquise Lee's numbers go down, Grimble's numbers go down. He is an effective blocker at the line of scrimmage. He catches the ball pretty well. He's not an elite athlete, but the Giants have got by with a number of tight ends in recent years that aren't elite athletes. They're just good quality, maybe old school type of tight ends. Grimble is going to make that team. You watch.
Ah, very interesting. I will get to some of the other undrafted free agents a little bit later. We're joined by Rob Ryan from CBSSports.com. Rob, round three, this is a pick that I think caught some people by surprise. Most draft experts like yourself kind of had him more as a fifth-round pick, and that was Jay Bromley out of Syracuse. Now, the production at Syracuse is hard to question. Double-digit sacks in his final year there, 14.5 tackles for a loss. There are numbers when you look at him and say, wow, those are similar to Aaron Donald's who went round number one. Obviously not the athlete Donald is, but what type of player did the Giants get in Jay Bromley?
Well, he's a good football player. His statistics, when you look at it, makes you think that he's going to come into the league and be a classic penetrating three technique defensive tackle. And he just isn't that caliber of an athlete. He uses his hands well. He's got a short, stocky build that I believe is going to help him as a run stuffer. You know, usually when we hear the term tweener, we're generally talking about those outside edge guys that aren't quite big enough to play defensive end or fluid enough to play outside linebacker. Brom is a little bit of a tweener in that, you know, 6'2", 310 pounds, he's not really stout enough. The teams want in a prototypical run stuffer. He's not really quick enough to carry over those statistics and be a very effective pass rusher. But he's a good all-around player that, as crazy as it sounds, was underrated despite those numbers and despite playing in a huge market in Syracuse. So I thought that it was a little bit earlier selection than I was expecting. But at the same time, I think it was a solid football player and a guy who has shown the work ethic to be successful in the NFL, especially as part of a rotation, of course, which the Giants famously use.
You know, Rob, it's funny you mentioned that. Jay Bromley was talking to the media the other day, and the Giants have already apparently told him they want him to add about 15 or 20 pounds of muscle so he can play that, you know, shade one technique and be that run stopper in the middle of the line.
Well, exactly, and that doesn't surprise me. And that's going to be one of the questions that teams have. Can he add that weight and still play with the strength that he did at Syracuse? I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, he wasn't rated higher. But certainly that's the reason why I didn't personally rate him higher. I would have liked to have seen him in person and get a better feel for just his overall body type. But at the same time, if he's able to handle that transition, we've seen what the Giants do by taking middle-round defensive linemen and putting them in their weight room and seeing what they can do a year from now, then I think that is the recipe for success for Bromley.
Talking to Rob Rank, CBSSports.com. And, Rob, it's rare that you'll have a fan base that's almost as, if not more, excited about the team's fourth-round pick than they are their first-round pick. And Giant fans, you know, especially a lot of the older guys, because they feel like Andre Williams kind of harkens back to that O.J. Anderson type of attitude, you know, in the early 90s, Rodney Hampton, all those guys, they are very excited about what Andre Williams can bring to the field from Boston College.
Well, I mean, the country's leading rusher, of course, and he just plays with the toughness, the physicality that I think anybody who appreciates old-school power football can love. And he's a guy that, you know, frankly, we questioned his speed, and he runs in the the high 4.4s, low 4.5s in the 40-yard dash, a very good time for a running back of his size. We question his hands. He goes to his pro day workout and he catches the ball out of the backfield very, very well. It's not his fault that at Boston College they didn't ask him to throw the ball very much. And, you know, and frankly, I think with the Giants already having some quicker, more athletic type of running backs who can catch the ball, and the offense catering more towards big play receivers as well as the tight end, he's not going to catch a lot of passes out of the backfield in New York. So to me, he was drafted into the ideal situation where he can just take the handoff, run a field, and show off his underrated combination of vision, lateral agility, and definitely power determination.
Well, I was going to ask you about his lateral agility because that seemed to be one of the knocks on him. You know, he can break tackles. Once he gets straight ahead and gets going, he has that, you know, low 4.5 type of speed. Is this a guy that can make people miss in the open field, or is he more of a put the shoulder down and run through you type of guy?
Well, he's certainly not going to dance around guys. You know, I mean, this isn't going to be Dancing with the Stars here, part two with the Giants here. You know, but he is a guy that can slip by defenders. I mean, he gives kind of a shoulder shake and then slips by, you know, kind of subtly. But that, to me, is more of what you're looking for at the running back position. You know, the guys that can make you miss in very close quarters, you know, those players are dynamic athletes. But at the same time, oftentimes, they're shaking so much that they get caught the line of scrimmage. That's what I like about Andre Williams, is that he gets what he can. He can certainly run you over. And he can also lean one way, get the defender, you know, trying to anticipate what he's going to do and lunge at him, and then he slips back to the other, you know, the other direction, cutting inside, cutting outside. And that ability to cut off either foot, I believe, is going to make him more effective at eluding open field tacklers than maybe his big size and you know, burly running demeanor might suggest.
Final one on Andre Williams, Rob. We're joined by Rob Reing, CBSSports.com. He had, much like catching the football, he wasn't asked to do a whole lot of busting in college. He also wasn't asked to pass protect a ton. But there doesn't seem to be much concern from the Giants or, frankly, from Andre Williams talking to him over the course of the last couple of weeks that he's going to be able to adjust and be a pretty good pass protector at the NFL level.
You know, I had an NFL running backs coach tell me that, you know, 90% of pass protection is just heart.
Right.
And, you know, you certainly have to learn your technique. And you certainly have to be big and strong enough. And we just anybody who has watched Andre Williams play football knows that he plays with heart, and he's a big, strong kid. So I don't anticipate that being a problem. You know, some of the backs in the past, with the Giants specifically, there have been some technical flaws. There have just been, you know, a seemingly lack of want to. And, you know, when a hard charging linebacker is coming at you, you know, you got to be a courageous man to take, you know, step up and handle that. I have no doubt in Andre Williams in that regard. He's going to sometimes struggle, I think, a little bit with some of the quicker pass rushers. But considering the NFC East division, I really think that he has the physicality to be able to handle the bigger pass rushers that are likely to be coming his way off of the edge in those 3-4 defenses.
Is there any worry about there being a little tread off the tire with all the workload he got in his final year at BC? I know he had a shoulder injury as well.
I think that there's got to be some concern. You know, whenever you use a running back to that extreme, then there has to be a little bit of a concern. But, you know, again, the backs that prove themselves to be special, just, you know, it's like they can just pop on these set of tires and they can just go hit it, you know, and they're still fine. And so I didn't see Andre Williams wear down towards the end of the season. In fact, it was quite the opposite. I saw him get better. I thought he made more dynamic runs towards the end of the season. So, you know, certainly there is some question, but at the same time, he's still a young man. He didn't, you know, he wasn't pounded into the ground early in his career. And so, therefore, I think that it's something that we're just going to unfortunately have to see how it plays out. But I think that Andre Williams is one of the few backs who can handle the big workload and has already proven that he can.
Well, in the next round, the Giants, Rob, went with a much safer pick, Nat Burhe out of San Diego State, the safety. Not a big height, weight, speed type of guy, but he's someone that when he was on the field was very productive at San Diego State.
He was very productive. He's a good football player. I know that you know, people nationally hadn't really talked much about San Diego State. And there were a couple of different defensive backs that were selected at San Diego State this year, but there is no question who the best of them was, and that's Burhe. I mean, he is instinctive. He's athletic. He's kind of, he's a savvy player. I mean, he is one of the few safeties in this draft class, and I'm including all of them, including the ones in the first round, who really uses his eyes to deceive the quarterback and deceive receivers. I mean, he kind of has a little bit of a jab step where he will look like he is about to break either to his left or to his right, and instead flatten out and go straight. Things of that nature where he is able to kind of deceive the quarterback and steal some passes, break up some passes at the last second. I mean, he really is. He doesn't look the part. He's not a big, lanky kid. He doesn't have explosive speed. But he is a good football player who I think is going to be able to help out as part of the rotation in the secondary, and I certainly expect him to make his mark on special teams. He's very aggressive. He's a good, reliable open field tackler who, I shouldn't say a very reliable open field tackler. He is reliable. At times, he will leave his feet to make the splashy hit. I haven't seen him miss one of those splashy hits. But, of course, in the NFL, he's going to have to learn to wrap up that much better.
Long-term, more of a box player or more of a center field type of guy?
In the NFL, I do have some concerns about whether he can be a true center fielder. I mean, he has the instincts, and he's a fluid athlete. And so that's generally the two most important factors in terms of playing center field. But he's just not an elite athlete. He doesn't have the elite straight line speed. So the level of competition questions that are going to follow him coming out of San Diego State are a little bit of a concern. And usually if you're going to be a center field, you want him to be a little bit longer. But, again, to me, I'd much rather have an instinctive football player who runs high 4.5s, 4.6s, rather than a guy who has no clue where the ball is and runs in the 4.4s. And this kid is instinctive and does locate the football. That's why I think he's got a chance.
Now, Devon Kennard, the Giants pick out of USC, their second fifth-round pick, to me was a very interesting one. Right now they have him working a middle linebacker where he played at some at USC, but he also was kind of a situational pass rusher, led the team in sacks last year. So where do you see him eventually fitting in the NFL, Rob? How did you have him rated? Did you see him as more of an outside rusher? Did you see him as a traditional linebacker in a 4-3? What do you think his future is here with the Giants?
I'm surprised by the Giants potentially moving him to middle linebacker. He is an instinctive player. He's a passionate guy, and you spoke to his versatility that he showed while at USC. At the same time, I didn't see a guy who was quite as effective taking on and shedding blocks at the point of attack as I generally would like a middle linebacker to be. I had him more as a 3-4 stand-up rush outside linebacker, perhaps even bulking up another 10, 15 pounds and playing that traditional 4-3 defensive end role. He is a guy who has very long arms. And because of that, I think that he's at his best when he's rushing the passer and is able to knock pass blockers off of him. He closes on the ball quickly, so that is an interesting characteristic for the middle linebacker role. And he was a very effective tackler, a guy that if he was close, he generally made the play. And unfortunately, he just struggled a little bit with injuries and some poor luck while USC was surrounded by an awful lot of really good football players early in his career and yet still saw the field. So to me, the fifth round has become the round where you start to kind of gamble on guys, whether it be character concerns, injury concerns, or guys who just have those body types that aren't necessarily the traditional ones. I like this gamble for the Giants. I think there's a number of clubs I talked to specifically about Kennard, and there was a belief, just based on every team that I talked to, that he could play multiple different, multiple roles, and that was one of the things that made it such an intriguing, movable chess piece, so to speak.
And the final pick for the Giants was Bennett Jackson Jr. He seems to be more of a high-ceiling type of guy. He's only played corner a couple years, didn't play quite as well his senior year as he did his junior year. How did you see Bennett Jackson heading into the draft, Rob?
Well, I am as a late-round selection, as a kid you just had said it. I mean, he wasn't as good as a senior as he was as a junior, has very intriguing athletic tools. There was some concern that he flatlined, that he basically was the same guy as the senior, and so therefore, does he have the work ethic? Is he going to be able to take that next step? And again, in the late rounds, I think that it's worth taking gambles on players like that. Obviously, top competition while at Notre Dame. The NFL loves length at the cornerback position. He's a big physical kid. So I think that it's certainly a roll of the dice, but it's one that could come up a winner for the Giants just because of the fact that he does have all of the athletic traits that you're looking for at that position.
Joined by Rob Ryan, CBSSports.com. And, Rob, you already mentioned Xavier Grimley. You gave us a little commentary on him. One other big name that the Giants brought in their undrafted free agents was Kelce Quarles. And if this draft was held back in January, I feel like Quarles might have been a third-round pick maybe. Did the Giants get a real good steal with him signing as an undrafted free agent?
I believe they did. He's the other player that I think of the undrafted free agents, the Giants brought in that I think has a real shot at making this team. Now, the Giants have enough talent along the defensive line that I think that Quarles has a little bit of an upfield battle, but there's no question his talent. I mean, this is a classic three-technique defensive tackle with long arms. He's strong at the point of attack. He has good quickness as a pass rusher. Of course, he was very much helped out by the fact that he had Jadeveon Clowney off around the outside. And so most of his career, he was facing single-team blocks, and he exploded as a junior to create all kinds of numbers that really helped us in the media kind of jump on him as far as being a second- to third-round pick. I talked to some NFL teams, and they thought that he was more of a third- or fourth-round guy all the way. And then, of course, there was some things off the field that the teams were a little bit worried about. And I think that's one of the reasons why he slipped the way he did. But in my conversations with him at the combine, I was impressed by his intelligence and his just his kind of his composure. And that to me is I think a great deal of stock in those conversations at the combine, because you really get a chance to look into the eyes of a player. And I've seen so many players in the past that walked in with some perceived character flaws, and I either was very concerned by them after having that conversation or a little bit relieved, and I was more relieved with Kelce Quarles. I think that whether it be with the Giants, because, again, they have a deep rotation on the defensive line, or with another club, I really believe that Kelce Quarles is going to make an NFL roster next year.
Rob, I'm going to roll through these other undrafted free agents. You stop me if you think one of these guys could seriously challenge for a roster spot. Linebacker Dan Fox, safety Charles Bennett, Emmanuel Dickey out of Georgia Tech, Jordan Stanton out of James Madison, Ethan Manamaliuna out of BYU, Kerry Wynn out of Richmond, and Justin Anderson out of Louisiana Lafayette, and finally Thomas Gordon out of Michigan. Any of those guys you think can be a serious challenger for a roster spot?
Well, I'm going to say Ethan Manamaliuna just because I wanted you to hear that pronounce it again. out of BYU, I mean, he's a strong kid. He's a typical BYU Cougar defensive lineman. He's not an elite athlete, but he's a strong kid. He plays with a good motor. He's going to be one of those guys who is tough to cut just because he does play tough at the point of attack. And he's a little bit more of a run stuffer than he is as a pass rusher. But there is a role, certainly, for those types of players in the NFL. I thought that he might have wound up with a 3-4 team, frankly. But I think that we talked before about the fact that the Giants are deep at the defensive line, not necessarily as deep as they've been in the past, of course, but they have some young developing players. And so I think Maliuna has a chance to be one of those guys. So he's the one that jumps out in my mind.
Final two questions for Rob Ryan from CBS Sports. And Rob, this one is kind of reflective of what the Giants have done in past drafts, and they've gotten burned a little bit by taking chances in the middle rounds on some size, speed, athlete type of guys. Do you think it's fair to characterize this year's draft as the Giants maybe taking a small step backwards and focusing on taking guys with higher football IQs that are good football players rather than being those combine kings that can sometimes come back and bite you in the butt?
I don't know that I think that the Giants taking a small step back. I think that they just did such an extraordinary job in free agency that they were able to handpick top prospects at the remaining positions of concern. The especially along the offensive line. I mentioned this a couple of times in our interview that signing four different offensive linemen. They're 27 years or younger. Excuse me, I think it's 28 years or younger that all have NFL starts on their resume. I just think that many in the national media, myself included, kind of focused on the Giants' offensive line concerns from a year ago and instead didn't give the team enough credit for what they did in free agency. And so because they fixed that spot, in my opinion, or at least they certainly believe so, otherwise they wouldn't have done it. I think they opened them up to take the dynamic receiver early on. And I really like it when teams recognize what makes a draft unique, and I believe that the Giants did so in selecting one of these wide receivers, because we've heard so much about how deep and talented this draft class was. Of course, it was deepest and most talented at the wide receiver position, so why not get a kid in Beckham who some say was the best athlete of the receivers. Others, as you mentioned, think that he's the best route runner of the group. To me, it all comes up beautiful for the New York Giants.
And I hate this question, but the fans like to hear the letter, so I'm going to ask you, Rob, give me a grade.
I gave the Giants grade a B-. I think that it is above average, just wasn't flashy. And frankly, for a team that obviously has the Super Bowl resume as the New York Giants have, you don't have to be flashy. The rest of the teams in that division have to be flashy. So I think that this is one that really builds on what the Giants have already been able to do in adding key players and key areas of concern. So again, I gave them a B-. Again, above average, just not the A's that teams love to hear. But at the same time, I gave the Seattle Seahawks a year ago a B-, and obviously that wound up helping them win the Super Bowl.
And we aren't going to know, obviously, how this draft actually grades out for about 3 or 4 more years anyway. Rob, CBSSports.com, thank you so much for the time. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend, and let's catch up down the road when we start getting ready for 2015. All right, bud?
You too. Thanks for having me, and happy Memorial Day to you and to all of our veterans out there.
Appreciate it, Rob. Thanks so much, my friend.
Thank you.
Have a good one. That's Rob Ryan, CBSSports.com. He always comes on with us a couple times to talk about the draft, review it, preview it. Does a fantastic job from CBS Sports. Just great dude. And really gave us some good information there on the Giants draft class. 201-939-4513. We've had some very patient folks holding on the line. Let's get to you. And we'll take your calls the rest of the way right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. We'll take you guys in the order in which you called in. Let's go to Mark in New York. Mark, you're up first this morning. What's going on, bud?
Hey, how you doing there? Good morning.
I'm doing well, Mark. How are you?
All right. I just had a couple of things I wanted to throw at you and, you know, see what you gave me for it.
Yeah, please.
You know, I called, halfway through the season, and, you know, of course, we were 0-6. I wasn't really happy about the situation. It wasn't really something that we could fix
right
in the middle of the season. But here we are in the off season, going into now mini camp. I'm thinking I like the new O-line. I like the new weapons and offensive running backs. I didn't think we needed of course, athletically, maybe we needed a upgrade in the secondary. I mean, we finished 8th in defense. But, like, to see all these upgrades in the secondary when we finished 8th, I was thinking, I mean, that's got to help you a little bit, you know?
I'll say this, Mark. The Giants' secondary today is so much more talented than it was at this time last year. It's not even close.
I cannot believe it. I know we deserve it, but, like, in years, we've never had this kind of talent in the secondary. It's always been at the front 7. It's not that I complain about it because we get the job done. But, I mean, like, to have John Beeson now, to see the special teams upgrade. My only concern, long story short, is, like, okay, we got a new offensive coordinator with the O-line, learning new system. I'm thinking it's going to be a learning curve. So I wasn't really all that concerned that we didn't get a tight end. I was more concerned with, as bad as we were playing on the O-line, that we could at least solidify something that says we can either run the ball or pass the ball, or give the defense some kind of break by getting first downs, or maybe even touchdowns. You know, I can't hang it all on Eli, but I like to say, thank God Eli didn't get injured, and we'd have more than just one issue. I'm kind of looking forward to this season, of course, because of the upgrades, but the way we address a lot of holes, I'm kind of hoping we kind of have a deja vu next year. And because I think the way the holes are filled this year, I would like to see 1 year learning curve with this team. But I'm also looking forward to the next draft and offseason because I think we're stealing. The way we've plugged in so many holes, I think, like, you can get a defensive end that can go next to JPP. You can get the tight end that everybody's crybabying about. I mean, I know Giant fans love what they want, but, I mean, you got to get what you got to get first. You can't just go get a car and not have insurance. You know what I mean?
I do.
It's not going to work. You know what I mean? I can understand you want a tight end. If you couldn't stop somebody blocking and running, then, I mean, it's going to be an issue.
Hey, look, Mark, and the thing about it, too, we talked about it at the start of the offseason, and we listed off all the things the Giants needed to fix, the needs they needed to fill, and the bottom line was that it was going to be very difficult to do all that in one offseason. This was going to be a bit of a process.
And that's how I loved how they addressed it. What was the main issue? I think special teams was the main issue. I think the O-line was the main issue. I think they tackled both of those issues. I think we're going to add a lot of issues for division foes while we're talking about adding things. I don't see many of us in the division playing defense other than us. I think our offense was the only thing broken. Having said that, looking at the Super Bowl, looking at the best offenses in NFL history, couldn't move the ball against the best defense. And then you're looking at I don't want to call Seattle a subpar offense, but that offense was good enough to move the ball. And eventually it wore that team down. So you really don't just need a power offensive team. So I kind of like the balance on both sides. I never seen the corner and safety depth this deep, and I'm really proud of my special teams. I just wanted you to chime in on that. God bless the veterans, and happy Memorial Day, and let me hear what you got to say on that, man. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the call. Look, I think the Giants are much improved, and I think you're right. One thing that is a little bit undersold here is how much better the Giants' special teams are going to be this year, and I think a lot of that's reflective of the guys they drafted. I think Burhey, Kennard, and Jackson – and even Andre Williams, for that matter, are all going to be special teams contributors. I really do. You know, Trindon Holliday could be a big upgrade as a return man. You have Quinton Demps as security there. Odell Beckham Jr. obviously has a lot of excellent return experience at LSU. So put all those together, and I think that the Giants can be a very, very good special teams outfit this year. Obviously, Steve Weatherford and Josh Brown, both very consistent veterans at what they do. They're both very good at what they do. Zach Diassi, an excellent snapper. So honestly, guys, I think the Giants special teams could be a real strength this year. And I don't know the last time we've said something like that, but I really do believe they can be a serious, serious strength of this team. And rather than you praying your opponent's special teams doesn't beat you on any given week, you're concerned about whether or not your special teams can come out and scare the other team a little bit. I mean, how many times have we gone to one of these games and said, boy, Ted Ginn, you worry about him. Oh, boy, you know, Dwayne Harris, you worry about him. You know, and you're like, now team's going to face the Giants, and, oh, crap, Trindon Holliday. Oh, no, we got to deal with Odell Beckham Jr. It's been a long time since we got to say something like that. 201-939-4513. Mike's down in Virginia next. Mike, what's going on, pal?
Hey, man, how you doing?
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm pretty good, man. I haven't called in a couple weeks. I got a new baby girl, so I've been very distracted.
Well, Mike, Mike, congratulations. Hopefully you've been getting a little bit of sleep.
No, not at all. But one thing I wanted to say was that this draft really reminded me kind of the 07 draft. Just the mayor, even of which we went into the draft with. In 06, everybody was about to lose their jobs, And then basically they needed a real strong draft to basically be effective now. And I really see that with this draft. All these guys, they don't have all that high ceiling, but it looks like they could come in and contribute right away for the most part.
Look, I agree. I think a lot of these guys can step in. And one of the questions that they wanted me to ask Rob Rang, and I didn't ask him because I don't think he kind of understands the Giants roster well enough to give a good enough answer. But, you know, how many of these draft picks are going to be able to step in and play right away? And, look, I think Bromley is probably, out of the first four picks, the least likely to contribute right away, only because there are so many defensive linemen ahead of him that I think are very skilled and talented, and I think Bromley does have to put some weight on to be an effective run stuffer. But I think Odell Beckham Jr. will start. I think Weston Richburg will start. I think Andre Williams will be a big part of the running back rotation. And frankly, I think Burhey and Kennard are going to be core special teamers from day one. I don't know how much they're going to contribute on defense, but you know, you're going to have, you know, 5-6 guys that are big parts of whether offense, defense, and special teams to start the year.
Absolutely. And one of my favorite things is our competition at center. I know a lot of people don't think about it, but to have a guy that's expected to start that you just drafted, and to have a guy like Walton there, I think it's really good for the offensive line and provides the extra depth, of course, because the Giants kind of drop like flies during the middle of the season. But that's it, John. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. 201-939-4513. And look, I think the competition on the offensive line is fantastic. And there's going to be a lot of it, not just to start, not just for playing time, but to make this roster. Like I said, you're probably not going to have more than 8 offensive linemen on your 53. I mean, you could stretch to 9. I have to go back historically and see how many times the Giants have carried 9 offensive linemen, but I guarantee it's not a lot. I mean, that's an 8-man position group, generally speaking. Because you have guys that can either swing to guard and tackle and play center, things like that. So, if you, and maybe I'll make this a topic one of the shows next week, but, you know, you break down the Giants' offensive line situation right now, you brought in young veterans, as Rob Ryan mentioned a couple times, and Charles Brown and John Jerry. Jeff Schwartz is obviously on the roster. J.D. Walton's a young veteran. You draft Weston Richburg. You have Snee, Pugh, and Beattie already here. Then you have Brandon Moseley, who was a fourth-round pick, who's only been in the league for 2 years. This is his third. Will Beattie, who's going into his fourth year. Eric Herman, who was a draft pick last season. I mean, you have a lot of guys on this roster now that can make this team and make a real case for making this team as an offensive lineman. So I think that competition is just going to make everybody better. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Paul up in the Bronx. Paul, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Hey, good morning, John. How you doing?
Good morning.
Hey, I just wanted to say the last two callers, they hit it on the nail, especially the first one when he said about the special teams. I'm looking forward to the special teams this year. It's going to be pretty awesome because we got a lot of depth and quality players who can come in. Like, if they don't start right away, they'll be out there, you know, making tackles, holding the other team back for minimal yardage. And, you know, when we return kicks, we'll have a lot of yardage to make up for, you know, like the learning curve for the new players that's coming in. You know, we weren't getting a lot of yardage last year. We were being stuck in the 20 and all sorts of things. So I'm looking forward to that. And the last caller, what he said about the center, the battle for the center position. Weston Richburg can play like 4 or 3 different positions on the O line. So a guy that smart, you know, battling for the person who's going to handle the ball to Eli, you know, that's a person that's probably not going to drop the ball, get off clean, snatch, protect. You don't have to worry about double A gap blitzes. You know, I like and look forward to things like that. So I am very happy, and I like the way Ryan, you know, described the draft grades for the different players we got. I just got 2 questions. So
yeah, sure.
One, my question was, I'm a young Giants fan. I'm like 23, so I don't know. I wanted to know if you know who was our punter and kicker tandem when we won the Super Bowl against the Bills. If you know,
in the Bills year, it was. Barr, obviously, was your field goal kicker. And the Bills' year, I believe it was Landetta was the punter, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Neil? Landetta, the year the Giants beat the Bills in the Super Bowl? Was that Landetta the punter? It was, right? That's what I thought.
Okay. And my last question is, and I want to hear what you would say. Mario Manningham, is he still on the roster?
Yes.
Okay. And do you think, like, him being a pass wide receiver that had some, rapport with Eli, that he can shed a little bit of light on Ruben Randle? And who do you think is better talent-wise, Ruben Randle or Mario Manningham, even though Mario Manningham has some tread on the tires?
I would say if you want to take them both as raw athletes before Manningham injured his knee, I would probably say, you know, Randall's a bigger guy, more physical. Manningham's probably a little bit quicker and a little bit faster. But now that Manningham's coming off this knee injury, and I don't even think he's 100% yet. We'll see if he's 100% by training camp. I think Randall's probably the better raw athlete. And in terms of whether or not Manningham can help him, you know, become a better wide receiver, the issue you have is that Manningham has never played in this current McAdoo offense either, so he's kind of learning it along with Randle, so I'm not sure how much he can really pass on.
Okay. No, I know that. I'm not really talking about, you know, the offense. I was more along the lines of, like, just having that connection with Eli. You know, just that subtleness, like, okay, I'm coming out of a break, boom, I know Eli's going to put the ball right there, even though it's going to be a different system. You just played with the person before. So.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not sure if that's something you can really pass on. I think that's something that's unique that has to develop between Randle and Manning almost on their own. I'm not sure someone else can really help that connection? Because honestly, the way I see it, Paul, you know, the quarterback's connection with each one of his individual wide receivers is a little bit different. The way Eli communicates and reads Victor Cruz is going to be different the way he communicates and reads with Akeem Nicks or Reuben Randall or Odell Beckham Jr. I think the chemistry is individual to the pair of players that you're talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you. Hey, thanks for taking my call, and have a great weekend, man.
Thanks, Paul. And I think you brought up another good point, too, about Weston Richburg. So if you figure out that Walton and Richburg are, in fact, two of your top five offensive linemen, and if Chris Snead, you know, ends up not being able to, you know, play through the, you know, the hip and the shoulder and the elbow and all that stuff, you know, maybe Richburg can play guard for you. You know, we talked about the Giants asking him to play guard. Maybe he'll move over and do that. 201-939-4513. Now, I think that takes some of his strengths away from him in terms of, you know, intelligence, you know, calling out protections and things like that. But if he's an athlete, he can pull and he can move, like people say. No reason he can't play guard. Adam in Columbus, Ohio. You're up next. What's up, Adam?
Hey, good morning. How you doing today?
Good morning, Adam. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, thanks. So the tight end issue seems to still be a pretty big hot button with the fan base. So
yeah.
Let me ask you something. Compared to who our options are now, Robinson, Davis, Donnell, and Grimble now potentially, talent-wise, compare them to Boss or Ballard from the 2 years we had the most success and won the Super Bowls. I mean, are you thinking we got a better stock now, a comparable stock now, or worse, talent-wise?
I would say Kellen Davis, out of everybody the Giants have had over the past few years, is probably the best blocker of everybody. I would compare him to, I don't know if you remember Michael Matthews, when he was here back in 2007, he was like the Giants' third tight end on the roster. He was a good blocker. He came in and, you know, like short yardage and goal line, and he was a very good blocker for them. And he actually motioned in the back a little bit too. I don't know if Davis is going to do that, but I'd say Kellen Davis is probably your best blocker, not going to do much damage as a receiver. Xavier Grimble, as Rob Rank said earlier, I think he's kind of a Ballard and Boss type, isn't going to blow you away with the 40 time, isn't going to blow you away with his quickness, but he can catch the ball. He's got some good size. He's a willing blocker. I think Grimble's that type of guy. Larry Donnell, I think, can be that type of guy. The jury's a bit out on his catching ability, but I think he's already a pretty good blocker, and he can be pretty versatile for you. Daniel Fells, honestly, I haven't seen enough of him. He didn't really play football last year. But, you know, he did catch 30 or 40 passes 1 year that he started earlier in his career. So that's how I would break him down. And Adrian Robinson, to me, is the raw one. He's the guy that has the most athletic upside with his size right. and speed. You know, he thinks he can be a big-time receiver and block, too. We'll see if that actually happens. He has to prove it. He has to prove that he can learn the playbook, mentally approach the game the right way, get his weight where the coach wants it. So if he can prove that, he probably has the most upside of all these guys.
Well, and the reason for that question is basically this. You know, the pick with Beckham at round one, I think, is a good choice. You know, there's a lot of people saying you go tight end instead of Weston Richburg in round two. And my thought is this, you know, you look back to last season, you have a very porous O-line, and in all fairness, you have a lot of poor decision-making by Eli Manning. But, you know, Eli Manning's still the guy in my estimation. He's still the two-time MVP. He's still the leader. He's still the one you need to catalyze the offense. You know, we have a $100 million contract on him. So you don't need a Pro Bowler at every single position. You know, it's unrealistic.
Right.
But you have a great guy in the slot. You have potentially a decent guy out wide. If you have an average tight end and you fortified the line, which hopefully we have accomplished, I think Manning is the guy you look to boost the production out of the tight end. You know, and we seem to have had success with that in the past. So, you know, one would hope that the average, at least if you can get average production at tight end, you know, a decent O-line and decent guys out wide will help you get the offense going again.
No, I agree. I think once you selected Odell Beckham Jr. with your first-round pick to give you another weapon to stretch the field, bring attention away from Victor Cruz, bringing in that top-end tight end became much less important. Because like you said, if you have two dynamic wide receivers, you don't need to have, you know, Roddy White, Julio Jones, and Tony Gonzalez. I mean, it's great to have him, but it's a luxury. You know, if you have those two big-time wideouts, and even, you know, you do have a pretty good third wide receiver in Reuben Randall, by the way. He's not a world beater, but he has shown potential. You don't have to have that great tight end. So if they can develop somebody here to be as good as a Kevin Boss, as good as a Jake Ballard, now, none of these guys, I don't even know for sure they can be that good. But if they can figure out a way to get one of these guys to that level, I think they'll be fine offensively.
Well, and Ballard, I mean, Ballard was big. You know, he was a physical guy, and it was nice. But I remember really, and I went to Ohio State just a few years before Ballard, and I still live in Columbus. And
right.
I really wasn't that big on him talent-wise coming out. But his production, you know, up the seam or across the middle or filling space was pretty good. But to be honest, I didn't think he was actually that gifted, relatively speaking. I thought it was Manning's play and Manning's ball placement and decision-making which set him up to succeed. I don't see any reason that can't happen with one of the four guys on the roster right now, especially with the, you know, if you let Eli Manning stand up and he's not looking at the sky 39 times in a season, hopefully we can accomplish that again.
I think that's all fair. I don't disagree with anything you just said.
So, yeah, I thought the other guys made a pretty good point, too. With the new special teams, that's kind of encouraging. Hopefully we get some production out of that and it makes everything go a little better. But, you know, only one way to find out.
Nah, no doubt about it. Adam, thanks for the call, my friend.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
Hey, thanks for calling, Adam. Happy Memorial Day weekend. And by the way, much like Rob Rank said earlier, thank you to the, obviously, service and, you know, Memorial Day. We're, you know, honoring the folks that, you know, died in the service to our country to maintain our freedom and maintain freedom throughout the world. And obviously, our hearts with the families of those that have fallen in action, keeping us free and spreading values, peace, and prosperity across the globe. So, hope everyone enjoys their Memorial Day weekend and remember the troops out there and everybody else that's given their lives in the service of this great country that we have the privilege of living in. 201-939-4513. Back to our phones. Let's go to Pierre down in Dallas. Pierre, you're up next. What's going on, buddy?
Good morning, fellas.
How are you, Pierre?
Pretty good, man. I just wanted to ask you, last week I was listening to you, and we talked, and I remember you saying that you were going to have someone on that was going to analyze the division draft, and I don't know, I moved into a house in Valley Ranch, and I missed the show, but did y'all go over that?
No, you know what? I have not done that yet. That's probably going to be sometime in June, I would say. What I'll do, I'll go three straight days. I'll get someone that covers the Eagles, someone that covers the Redskins, and someone that covers the Cowboys. So that'll happen sometime in June.
Okay. And what I wanted to say was I foresee in the future, in another 2 to 3 years, man, I see that the NFC East is going to be the beast again because I see an arms race going on.
Yeah, Pierre, I agree. I think all four of these teams, and I think the Redskins have kind of been doing this for a couple years already, I think all four of these teams are kind of in the middle of a rebuild on the run type of thing. I think Chip Kelly is still trying to bring in his type of players in Philadelphia. I think you saw that with the cutting of DeSean Jackson. I think the Cowboys have been retooling now for a couple years. They've managed to go 8-8 as they've done it. But we've seen them rebuild the offensive line. We're seeing them rebuild the defense now. And I think they're in the process of maybe being a couple years away from competing for a Super Bowl if Tony Romo can stay healthy. And I think the Redskins, if RG3 can figure it out and stay healthy, I think they could challenge with all their weapons on offense in a couple years too. So I agree. I think the NFC East, while they've been mired in mediocrity for the last couple of years, you know, I think in two or three seasons, if assuming the quarterback play maintains where it is, this could be a very, very strong division.
Right, I see. I'm old school. I can see where the NFC conference, you know, just went back to back Super Bowls because the whole conference, you know, you look at the West, the South, you know, yeah, the North is picking up. I mean, the whole conference is you. If you get out of the conference, you pretty much won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and quite frankly, Pierre, to me, last year, once you got past the Broncos, and I think the way the Broncos got blown out in the Super Bowl was a bit of an aberration. I think they're a much better team than that. But once you got past the Broncos last year, the Patriots didn't scare me at all. The Chiefs, by the end of the year, were kind of banged up with those pass rushers. They didn't scare me a whole lot. No one out of the NFC South scared me. I thought the Colts were overrated. No one out of the AFC North scared me at all. I didn't think they were very good. So I think the AFC is in the beginning of a downswing, and the NFC is swinging up a little bit. I got an interesting question for you, Pierre. What are the expectations right now? I know people in Dallas and Texas can be a little bit crazy sometimes, but it seems to me that a lot of people are predicting the Cowboys, at least up here, to really fall off the cliff this year, be a 5-11, 6-10 team, be a last-place team in the NFC East. What are the expectations down there in Dallas?
Actually, John, and by the way, I wanted to say this, man, congratulations on getting ready to get married. I don't know if you have been already or not.
Nah, June 28th, my friend, it's coming. And here's the interesting part of it, too. my honeymoon's supposed to be to Thailand, and we're leaving 2 days afterwards. And yesterday, the military had a coup, took over the country, and basically haven't named the new leader yet. So we'll see how that goes. That could be interesting.
I've been married 13 years, brother, and it can be a challenge at times, but congratulations. But as far as you're welcome. As far as the expectations, man, I really don't want to jinx my boys. Now, I really think that I really don't want to say it, but I think the nation doesn't have a good view on what's going to happen around here. That's as much as I want to say.
Well, Pierre, I'll say this. I'll say this specifically. I think the offense is going to be fine. Dez Bryant's good. I think Terrence Williams will be fine as a number two guy. You got Jason Witten. Beasley and Harris are pretty good. Your offensive line now, I think, is one of the best in football, to be quite honest with you. The question is the defense going to be decent? Can it be the 16th-ranked defense in the league, or is it going to be like 28, 29, and 30 again?
I tell you what, you can't be worse than what they were last year, so you can't be better. You know, and see, it's funny, though, because as bad as the defense was, they still was in the hunt for the dang the title for the division. I mean, come on, what gives? I mean, you know, as much as people talk about the team, but in the last 3 years, been competing, that's been the most consistent in the NFC East, you know. So, you know, you can't be any worse than 32, so you can't go anywhere but up. I don't know how far up, but you can't get any worse than 32.
I hear you. Pierre, thanks for the call, my friend. Good to hear from you, and hope you'll be calling back soon. All right, pal?
All right, brother. Y'all have a good one.
Thanks, man. 201-939-4513 from Pierre in Dallas up to Maine, and say what's up to Charlie. What's going on, Chuck?
Hey, John. Hey, I was going to talk about the coup in Thailand, and I sent you a tweeter on Twitter on that.
So did you?
Yeah. I hope you got a plan B.
You know what? You know, I have two plan Bs. My one plan B is, even going with our previous plan, what we're going to do, we're only planning on spending like 2 days in Bangkok. You know, we're going to go to Cambodia for a day to see Angkor Wat. Then we're going to go down to like the southern beaches down there. So our plan B is, if there's issues in the capital, which is where most of the problems happen, we'll just fly into there and then fly literally right out, and we'll go to a different region, and we'll stay out of Bangkok. Now, if it gets so bad where the whole country goes to hell, which, you know, knock on wood, hopefully that doesn't happen, we have not investigated our plan C yet.
Hey, and I hope you're not taking Malaysian Airlines either.
No, we are not taking Malaysian Airlines, Charlie. Thank you very much. Big Blue Kickoff Live from the Bermuda Triangle.
Hey, you can always come to Maine. Very beautiful place in the summer for a wedding.
You know, it's funny, actually. I was reading about this place up in Maine the other day, and this shows how, you know, I would never read about this if I wasn't getting married in June. Apparently there's some place up in Maine to get married that you got to book like 3 years in advance. It's on some kind of lake or something like that.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of places like that. There's French Point Resort. There's Midas Lodge, which is right on the lake. You know, a lot of rustic places. Getting married on a, you know, in a big barn with 10 acres of land. You can rent the whole place for the whole weekend and, you know, tent out and all that kind
of stuff.
Now,
I got to imagine with your DJing business, you've probably been a part of some of those weddings. Is that true?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. So anyway, hey, if things go wrong, let me know. I'll tell you where you can
I appreciate that, Charlie. Though, I got to admit, Maine, I'm sure, is lovely. Not quite Thailand.
Yeah, no, it's totally true.
What do you got?
I was listening on Monday, and I couldn't believe my ears. I mean, this gentleman from Montreal, Giant fan. And I guess, like, the winter was so cold up there, some of his brain cells were still frozen and hadn't thawed out when he said Jerry Reese should be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, no, what Jason said, and now, in fairness, I think Jason was reeling a little bit from the Habs being down 2-0 to the Rangers, and he's probably was doing a little drinking the night before. But his point was that if Jerry Reese can build this team back up from scratch now and bring them back to a Super Bowl, that would warrant consideration for him being considered a Hall of Fame general manager. Now, Paul Dottino brought up a great point, Charlie, that they generally don't put GMs in the Hall of Fame. I mean, there just aren't a lot of guys in there. So, from that perspective, you know, probably not. But if he was able to do that, And it would be completely with his guys if the Giants went back to the Super Bowl at some point. You would have to give him credit for doing that.
Yeah, but I think the Hall of Fame is more the walk of shame in my book. But anyway, I digress. Hey, I saw a couple of interviews on some of the new players, and I thought the X-Man, our new tight end, he was really poised. I really like what he had to say.
I agree.
You know, I thought he was, like, mature. I think this guy is going to really contribute, you know. Hey, and did you have a chance to see Dyche, Emmanuel? Did you get a chance to see him, talk to him or anything?
No, you
like
know
that?
What? They did not bring him out to talk to the media. I've seen him walking around the hallways, to be quite honest with you. At least I think I have. I got to be honest with you folks. There's about 45 new people in this building. And if I told you I could pick everybody out of a lineup, I'd be lying to you. There's just too many new faces. I know a lot of them, just not all of them. But I have not talked to him, but he is around.
Yeah, because I'd like to just, you know, get an idea of what his demeanor is, if he's confident, is, you know what I mean? If you get a chance to do that, just let us know.
I will do that. No problem, Charlie.
Hey, there's one thing that I did when I was doing a radio show, it was a talk show, it was called Interview. I interviewed my family, my mother's family. There was 11 of them, and 7 of them went to World War II.
Oh, wow.
And so what I did is I interviewed them. This was probably 4 or 5 years ago, about, you know, them going to war. And I had my mother was a WAC. Her two sisters were WACs. My uncle, my father was in the war. He went to Pacific and then a bunch of uncles. So I'm going to put that up on YouTube. And it's really interesting. It's and some of them have passed away now. So it was a really great interview listening to them. You know, talk about their experiences. And, of course, I put music with it, the music of the period.
Right.
So it brought back memories and now, things. So I'm going to be putting that up.
Now,
so.
Charlie, I minored in history in college, and I like to think of myself, and I take a lot of military history class, but I got to admit, I don't know what a WAC is. What is a WAC?
WAC, it's the Ladies Army at the time.
I got
the Army Corps. And three of my aunts were, well, my mother and two aunts were in it, and one of my aunts, which you'll hear on the broadcast, she was one of the first women to fly in an airplane. She was a radio operator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then my aunt was in the Air Force, WAC, and then she went back and she was one of the Rosie Riveters. So it's an interesting look at an Italian family going to war. So
sounds
so
interesting.
I'm going to try to put that up. Anything else I got is the only thing is, like, I'm just concerned about left tackle. If Beatty doesn't come back, which I think he will, and I hope he will, I think we're a little shy there, unless we think Charlie Brown can really take that over if we have to wait for Beatty, say, if he goes on PUP for 6 weeks. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? I think depth at left tackle is probably a bigger issue than a lot of people think, you know, only because of Beatty's health situation. Now, I think Beatty will be back in time for the regular season. I think we'll be back in time for the preseason. That's just my feel and my guess. Maybe I'll prove him to be wrong. I don't know. I'm admitting this is just an instinct thing from me.
Yeah.
But we'll see. And if he's not, you know, do you put then Charles Brown a right tackle, move Pugh to the left side? I think that'll be one of the interesting things to see here, because my guess is that Beatty's not going to work here in OTAs and minicamp. So what I want to see is who's at left tackle. Is it going to be Pugh or is it going to be Brown? My guess is that it's going to be Brown for now. And then if Beatty's not back by training camp, maybe we'll see a switch for Pugh then. But I think for now you'll see Brown at left tackle and you'll see Pugh on the right side. That's my guess.
Yeah, and that offensive line's got to be in sync. They've got to play a lot together during the preseason, and so they can, you know, really get in sync because it's going to take them a while to adjust, and we don't need them doing that in week one against Detroit.
I agree, Charlie, and that's huge. People, you know, Lance Meadows does a good job always bringing that up. People underestimate the importance of these offensive lines, you know, developing a chemistry where the sum of the parts is a lot bigger than the individual talent of these guys. And I think it's important to get these guys in their spots early, let them get used to one another so they can play well as a unit once the season starts.
Exactly. And special teams, I think, is like you guys are saying, it's the biggest upgrade because we lost 2 games last year because of special teams. You know, those two punt returns,
yeah.
One in, you know, Denver, and the other one, I can't remember, but Kansas City, I think.
Yes, Kansas City. Dexter McCluster had a big punt return for a touchdown, right.
And so we lost two games. So if we can turn that around, I think our special teams this year maybe can win two games. So that's a four-game swing, and so 6-10 sounds good to me.
I was going to say, for a second there, you were sounding optimistic, Charlie, and then you dropped a 6-10 on me. Thanks for the call, pal.
All right.
Have a great weekend. And by the way, just a reminder, everybody, that no show tomorrow morning, no show Monday morning for Memorial Day. I'm trying to get Lance to come in next Tuesday. I'll be out at the Giants charity golf outing, but hopefully Lance will be here to be able to host the show. 201-939-4513. I thought Charlie was going to be optimistic there for just a second. I really did. And then he said, 6-10. Oh, boy. Charlie. But in terms of the special teams for a second and the return, guys, how many years have we gone into these seasons and said, boy, I can't find a kick return or a punt return to save my life here. Where are we going to get this guy? Where is he going to come from? I'm sitting here right now, and we got about four guys that I'd be confident about doing it, at least kicks. I'd be great with David Wilson. I'd be great with Trindon Holiday. I'd be great with Odell Beckham Jr. I'd be great with Quinton Demps. I'm good with all those guys. And for punts, throw in the same guys except put Ruben Randall in for David Wilson. You're in good shape. 201-939-4513. Craig is down in Fort Worth, Texas. Craig was on the line yesterday. We lost him right before we were going to go to him. Craig, what's going on?
What we do? I was just calling. Thank you. I have muscular dystrophy, and I actually listen to you and your show during the season and the off season. A big part of my therapy and physical therapy. And I just wanted to know, you could tell it. I think the class of the Giants organization is reflected in your show and how you know the guys that call in like Leonard Shakes, and you can relate to them and talk to them. It's a big part of what I do every day.
So Craig, I appreciate that. Thank you for being a part of it, and I'm glad we could help you along in achieving your goals and what you're trying to do.
Oh, my pleasure, man. It's like I said, my doctors 3 years ago said I wouldn't be really walking or anything, and this year they said, hey, maybe I could. I'm not going to go to a Giants game, but they said spring training is in my future, so that's my goal.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, cool, huh? So anyway, I just want to thank you and pass that along, and I was listening to what Pierre was saying. He lives in Dallas. And listening, you know, every year Jerry Jones sells this team. And if you listen to the sports radio in this town, every year they've got these guys picked at 13-3, you know, 12-4. It's amazing the way he fires this town up. And listening to the radio guys in this town, how they, you know, what they go through the list every year. Like, well, I think we can take these guys and this guy. It's been this way for 18 years. And every year they're going to the Super Bowl. And every year it's interesting how Jerry has kind of backpedal and say, well, this or that happened. We were right there. You could see by the Giants how they were right there. That's how we're going to model ourselves. We could be right there until the last game. And every year it's interesting right after the season ends how, you know, they were so close and then they start all over again. You know, it's quite amazing.
Now, Craig, in fairness, I don't follow it obviously as closely as you do being down there, but it seems like Jerry has taken his foot off of the gas pedal a little bit. He hasn't quite spoken to the largesse that he has in years past the last couple of seasons. He's kind of toned it down a little bit, hasn't he?
Well, maybe outside at the Florida meetings or whatever, but if you're here listening to one of the three large sports radio stations, especially the one that's the flagship station for the Cowboys, I'd have to say no. I mean, there are actually commentators that
they're homers
on air, you know, how they hate the Giants. Not even the Eagles or the Redskins, but they hate the Giants. And Jerry came in, he just had a, he was just talking about how Romo is still the guy, you know, two back surgeries, but, you know, he's still a top five quarterback. This was on the ticket just a couple of days ago. And I don't think the rhetoric is certainly not, you know, hasn't toned it down at all.
All right, fair enough. Well, Craig, so what I'm going to do then, I'm going to find the Dallas Cowboy version of Charlie in Portland, Maine, to try to inject some pessimism into the Dallas Cowboy fan base. That's what you need is what you're telling me?
Oh, yeah. I don't think that's allowed here. I mean, they still have lynching parties, but I wouldn't advise that for Cowboys. I mean, my wife has 49 relatives within 25 miles of here. Every one of them is a Cowboys fan. It's been that way for 25 years. It's me against them. So it's quite interesting.
Craig, God bless you, man. Keep up the good fight down there, all right, my friend?
All right, good luck in your marriage.
Hey, thank you, Craig. You have a good one. Call back anytime, and thank you for being such a loyal listener. It's much appreciated. Your line was crapping out a little bit there. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Ralph up in the Bronx. He's up next. What's up, Ralphie?
Hey, John, how you doing? How's everything?
I'm doing great, Ralph. How about you?
I'm good. I'm just questioning, do you think that McAdoo is going to go more no huddle than Gilbride? Because if he does, I think with the weapons that we got on the outside, Eli might have a 5,000-yard season.
Ralph,
I'll
say this, Ralph. I'm not sure what a lot of the details of McAdoo's offense is going to be. But, however, let me add this. If there's one thing I'm pretty sure that he is going to do is this offense is going to be much faster and much more up-tempo. Now, I don't know if that means strict no huddle. It might just be, you know, a quick muddle huddle and then, you know, get up to the line of scrimmage and, you know, take the snap with 18 seconds on the play clock.
Yeah,
but I believe
I'd love to see that.
I think it'll be a much, much, much more fast-paced offense. And even though the few players that have talked to the media and they ask them what the offense is like, all of them to a man have said it's faster paced. So I do think you will see that.
Yeah, I mean, because let's be honest, when Eli's at his best, it's in the 2 minutes. 2 minute drill, Eli's at his best. So I feel with the receivers he's got now, who are you double teaming? Like, really, who are you double teaming? And Eli, let's not forget, 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, had a 4,800-yard season, right?
That's correct.
If I'm not mistaken?
He did.
So think about with these weapons, he can have a 5,000-yard season with about 35 to 40 touchdowns. I mean, with that right there, I mean, let's be honest, we're as serious business as any team in the NFC.
Well, Rob, I'll say this. I'm not going to sign Eli up for 5,000 yards and 35 touchdowns yet. Let me see what Odell Beckham Jr. can do first. Look, I think we all have high hopes for him as a rookie. We think he's going to come in and be pretty good right away. But to ask him to be good as Hakeem Nicks was in his prime in year number one might be asking a little bit much.
But I'm thinking like this. If we're going to go four wide most of the time, because it's probably going to be that kind of look, figure, if Manningham's healthy, if we go four wide, I mean, are we going to put Beckham on the outside? I mean, I think it's going to be two slots with him and Cruz, but basically at the same place.
Honestly, Ralph, what I would say, I think there's a chance you could see Jernigan as that fourth receiver sometimes too.
Exactly,
Then you would put him and Cruz inside, and you have Randall and Beckham near the sidelines.
That's dangerous right there. Think about that. Like, but the only team that you think that can go against that offense like that would be a Seattle, and they lost a lot of their secondary.
Say this too, though. I do think this team wants to get a little bit back to running the ball a little bit more too. So while you will see some four wideouts, I think you are going to see a rededication to the power running game with Rashad Jennings, with Andre Williams.
True. I'm just excited because, like you said, it all starts with the men up front. I mean, they never get the credit.
Yep.
And no Super Bowl team wins without them. I mean, you do not win a Super Bowl without a great offensive line. I'm sorry. It just goes down in history. I mean, you have to have an offensive line. And I think with the additions that we got this year and the draft picks, and, you know, I mean, I'm so excited. And like you said, the biggest thing, too, is special teams. We haven't had a return guy. We got four return guys that have gone for touchdowns. Like, you kidding me? Like, we haven't had that since Megan and Von Dixon, if I'm not mistaken. Like, this is dangerous. Like, this is scary right now. And I'm just so excited and can't wait for this season to start.
Well, Ralph, it's coming. We got OTAs next week. We got training camp in the summer. And then the regular season, let's see. It's the end of May, so we got June, July. Just over 3 months away. It's coming fast and furious.
It can't come fast enough for me, man. Thanks, John. And God bless if I don't talk to you. Good luck on your wedding. I've been married 22 years. Don't listen to the guy with 13. It's great. God bless.
Thank you, Ralph. I appreciate it, man. Have a good one. I appreciate the well wishes. 201-939-4513. I'm going to clean up the show with Lynn and Maryland. You're going to be last, Lynn. But Pierre in Dallas called back, which is rare for him, so maybe it's something very pertinent to add. Pierre, what do you got for me?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to say something quickly. I'm a football fan. I'm an objective football fan. I love my NFC East teams. If the Cowboys are doing poorly, I'll say that. If the Giants have done something great, I'll say that. Same with the Redskins or the Eagles. I'm a football fan, so Jerry Jones didn't. I will objectively, say when my team is on the verge of doing something great. So my fellow Texan in Fort Worth, he can say what he wants to say. I would challenge the fans in New York or anywhere that are Giants fans, get on the Cowboys website, listen to the 105-3 fan interview of Tony Romo, and draw your own conclusions, and don't let the media, don't let anybody think for you. Think for yourself.
All right. Sounds good, Pierre.
All right.
Appreciate it, bud. 201-939-4513. Look at that, Pierre. He's like, don't kill all Cowboys fans in Texas here. We're all not crazy. But I do get the feeling when I go down there, in all fairness, and Pierre obviously is not one of those guys that I'm talking about now. You know, from the non-diehard guys that super follow things down there in Dallas, my feeling is that they do go all in, and the expectations are extremely high every year, even if the talent might not dictate it. I do get that feeling down there. And I think it's a different culture. I think in Philadelphia, in New England, in Boston, in New York, I think there's a lot more of a cynical mindset. I think, you know, down there in Dallas, even if you want to talk about, like, Dolphins fans in Miami to some extent, people more in the South, even maybe in the Midwest, I think people are more naturally optimistic. And they, you know, they all believe and they buy in and they're into it. And I think that's good to a certain extent, but then expectations get out of whack, things go bad, and then you want to fire everybody. And that's where I think you run into some problems sometimes. But, you know, I think it varies from place to place, and obviously there are different types of fans everywhere, but I do think there are probably more cynics up here than there are down south. That's just my feeling from being in different places, and that can be a good thing. It can also be a bad thing, too. I mean, I tell everybody all the time, when I visit where my future wife is from in Des Moines, Iowa, and when we travel with the Giants and we go to Green Bay to play the Packers and things of that nature, the people that live in the Midwest are some of the nicest people you will ever meet in your whole life. I mean, they are like saints out there. They're relaxed. They're calm. They're not in a rush. And they're just so nice. It's completely different than New York, let me tell you, as someone that was born and raised here in Brooklyn. And, you know, it drives you nuts sometimes with the pace. You know, they go slower and stuff like that. But they're very nice. And I think that reflects in the fan base sometimes where, you know, they're very optimistic and they want to think the best of things before the season starts. And when things go bad, you know, the mobs come out and they want to, you know, burn the building to the ground. But I do think, generally speaking, that, you know, other fan bases are more optimistic than others. I mean, like, for example, Mets and Jet fans are conditioned to expect to lose. I mean, just based, you know, listen to Joe Beningo on The Fan. Just listen to him. Listen to him. He has been psychologically scarred to the point where he expects his teams to lose every year. I mean, his favorite quote is that my teams will never win another championship until I die. He honestly believes it, too. I worked with Joe for 8 years over there. About 6 years over there. And let me tell you, Joe honestly believes that. Beningo believes that the Jets will not win a Super Bowl until after he's in the ground. And I don't think you'll hear people down in Texas say stuff like that. That's just the nature of being, I think, from the Northeast in a lot of ways. Our final call of the show at 201-939-4513. He brings the calm, the collected, the relaxed point of view to the Washington, D.C. area, and that is Len, who's down in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah. Hey, John. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for the introduction. Listen, I haven't had a chance yet, probably because I've forgotten to do it, but, you know, congratulations on the wedding.
No, thank you. I appreciate
wonderful.
That, Len.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And based on your last few sentences before you put me on the line, you're not moving to Iowa, are you?
No, I am not. I am not going anywhere.
There you go. Listen, I've enjoyed the conversation about special teams this morning, and I just wanted to add a couple of things and maybe try to set a goal or two for the Giants as it comes to special teams. You know, it's more than just, you know, scoring off your special teams. You know, we need good coverage, and the good coverage starts with good kicking, and you know, we need better production from Steve Weatherford. I mean, I was not happy with Weatherford's year last year.
Weatherford had a couple games last year, Len, where he was very inconsistent. I forget which game it was. It was the game in the Giant Stadium that it was really windy. Was it the Seahawks game? Maybe it was the Dallas game on the 24th, and he had some god-awful kicks in those games. And otherwise, he was pretty good, but he did have two games where he had some issues.
Yeah. Well, I you know, it starts with that kicking, and, you know, I know Tom likes positional kicking and, you know, get it outside the outside the hash marks, you know, toward the sidelines, and, you know, you can pin people in and, you know, make a play and create field position. So, and then on the coverage teams, and, you know, as your guest this morning said, he alluded to it about pass blocking, and I believe that wholeheartedly. He quoted an offensive backfield coach from the NFL talking about it's 90% heart. I think when it comes to special teams, my Lord, it's I think it's 98% hard.
Oh, agreed.
You really got to want to play special teams in the NFL. I mean, the collisions are unbelievable.
Well, Len, quite frankly, you better. I mean, if you want to make it in this league, you better be willing to play special teams. Otherwise, there's a bunch of other guys that are lined up on the street that will happily go out there, cover punts and cover kicks to have a job in the NFL.
Yep. And, you know, we'll take the $500,000 that goes along with it.
Right.
I agree. But it still starts, you still got to have that willingness to, you know, go out there and do it. Let me ask you, John, would you take this as an outcome for 2014 on special teams? We don't score any touchdowns off special teams.
No.
But neither does the other team.
No.
Would you take that wash, John?
Nope. I want at least one return touchdown this year. I'm getting greedy.
Okay. And you want at least one more than what the other team gets, right?
Sure. Why not? I'll sign up for that.
I'll take an even break on that. I'm not going to be greedy. My whole goal this year, and I've been talking about this so far, is, you know, I want to create field position, John. You know, when the other team starts from the 20, it's a lot better than when they're starting from the 40.
That's true.
You know, the playbook gets different. It's just different. It's going to take them more plays to move down the field. And in the NFL, John, the more plays you run in a possession, the more chances there are you're going to make a mistake. Or the other team's going to make a great play and create a turnover, intercept a pass, you know, anything along those lines.
Field position is one of the more underrated numbers in this league, Len. It really does help. Just having to get one fewer first down on a particular drive can make all the difference.
Yeah, well, actually, and I've talked about that before, I want three more a game, John. I think if we can average three more first downs a game, everything's going to change. It keeps the defense off our defense off the field. And it keeps the other team's offense off the field. It gives us a better chance of tilting the field. You know, we got to score points eventually. Somehow we got to come up with some points.
We've
thrown 24 out there as a number where we want to score at least 24. Maybe we want to go beyond that by the time the season starts. But you know, I guess what I'm leading up to, and I hope we can have more conversation on this once OTAs start and we learn more about this offense. You know, we got 90 plays. We got 90 players on the roster. And it's a great time to be a Giants fan. You know, we look at them all, and even the undrafted free agents. All the potential is unbelievable. You know, that kind of thing. You know, the tight end, Qualls from South Carolina. You know, Rob talked about him a little bit this morning. I mean, what do we want to do with these players? I mean, what kind of team do we want to be? What do we want the other teams to fear about the Giants? And I'm trying to get a handle, and maybe we're not going to be able to get an answer to that or even guess at what that is.
You know, that is a good question, Len. I think the way the team's set up right now on defense, you're going to be afraid of throwing on this group because of the playmakers you have in the secondary. And offensively, I think you're right. I think it's a wait and see. Let's see what this offense looks like before we make that call.
Yeah. We all have our personal wishes as to what we want the offense to do and what we want the defense to do and so forth. But I'd be interested to know, you know, when you get inside that locker room, what is it they're thinking about? What kind of team does Tom want this team to be? I mean, what's the personality of this team? I guess we have to wait, John, to see what the answer to that is. But I'm real curious about that. And, hey, it's a great time of year to be a Giants fan, and I'm proud to be a Giants fan. You know, if I can reflect just for a moment on Pierre's comments.
Yeah, please.
I guess I'm a football fan. But I can tell you this, I'm a Giants fan first. For me, it's all about the Giants. You know, if the other team does well, it's really a silent tribute for me. For me, it's just all about the Giants doing well. Hey, John, thanks for taking my call. You have a great weekend.
Len, you have a fantastic weekend as well.
I hope it's a beautiful one. I hope it's a beautiful one up there. And enjoy Brooklyn, Queens this weekend.
I will. Thanks a lot, Len.
Okay, take care.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It, Ben. Yeah, I got a nice little busy weekend coming up this weekend. It should be fun. 4 days off. A lot of stuff going on. All right, let me go through some of these Twitter questions. I feel like I've been negligent on Twitter over the course of the week. So let me, for 5 minutes here, go through some of your comments and questions. At BX Brooklyn 21, have to pray there aren't any major injuries that key for any season. At Trina NY, at KTNT 80, we're looking really good right now, but I'm always worried about training camp injuries, so the roster may be different. They make really good points. I mean, we've gone into seasons before and said, this secondary is so deep. We got 9 guys that can start. Then by the time you get to September, there's 4 guys there that aren't in casts and knee braces. So we'll see what happens there. Offensive line, the same type of thing has happened with a lot of these injuries. So those certainly are things that can determine how well a season can go, and it's, you know, really early to try to make any type of those predictions. How do we know the O-line is going to be any good with the new guys and some of the same questionable health issues? That's from Scott Barman. Well, Scott, I think for a couple of reasons. Number one, you have a lot more depth this year. So even if a couple of the guys do get hurt, you do have guys that have started in this league that can at least step in and be average starters for it. You drafted a new guy in Weston Richburg. Pugh's in his second year. Snead's healthier, in my opinion, than he's been in 2 or 3 years. So that's how I look at it. Allie Jackson, do you ever think the struggles that some of the offensive linemen had was because of the old system and how complex it was? I really don't, to be honest with you, Allie. I don't think the system was that complicated for the offensive line. I think it was more of a wide receiver, tight end type of thing. At Walpat R, Patrick Wallace, good group this year. Really good hope to have JPP bounces back from injury. Moore brings 10 sacks. Hope. Hashtag Giants chat. I think 10 sacks or more, you're probably asking too much. I think you hope between he and Kiwi, they can combine to give you 15. I think if you get 15 between those two guys and then Pierre Paul gives you double digits, I think you'll be in okay shape. What else do we have here? H. Carson fan, Cowboys defense is going to have a hard time getting on the field. Their O-line is set for the next 10 years. It's a good point. Mike Farmer. Oh, come on, Mike. I like Pierre. I'm not letting you bash Pierre. I'm not reading that tweet. Sorry. And Harry Carson, here we go. WAC, Women's Army Corps, waves. Women accepted for volunteer emergency service as part of the Navy during World War II, and obviously the Air Force as well. You know, I consider myself a bit of a military historian. I did not know that. I know they did, like, the rivets thing that he talked about. They did a lot of factory work. I wasn't aware of the WAC program. That's a bad job out of me. Women's Army Auxiliary Corps, WAAC. Thanks for that, guys, and of course, they are included in Memorial Day weekend to all the ladies out there that serve and have served and died in service to this country. We thank them for their service as well. Jerry DK, 2007 Giants Super Bowl champs was a Jerry Reese and not a Corsi team. Of course, he would not have been blamed if they went 2-14. Well, Jerry, let's be fair. I mean, Ernie Accorsi brought in 70% of the players on that team. So while I understand where the blame would have went, just because that wouldn't have been fair doesn't mean it's fair to give Jerry Reese the credit. And look, he does get some credit. That draft class helped. He put the team together that year. And there is an art to doing that, to getting the right chemistry. I give him credit for that. So that's all good. That being said, Ernie Accorsi deserves credit as well. Remember, they actually decided to give him a Super Bowl ring for that year because he was a guy that brought in most of the players on that team. Just saying. H. Carson fan. Cynical, thy name is Philly. At Just Juice, can someone provide me a pre-sale offer code? No, sorry, we don't do that here, buddy. Next. at BX Brooklyn 21, will Knicks win it all in my lifetime? No, they probably won't. Sorry. I hope that's not true, though. And, yes, and the Post reported today that the Knicks would prefer Brian Shaw to Derek Fisher. No crap. So would I. I mean, he has coaching experience as an assistant and as a head coach. I'd rather have him, too. He has a problem. He's under contract with the Nuggets. You can't just take guys that have jobs. Doesn't work that way, all right? I mean, and the Knicks don't really have compensation picks to pass on here to the Nuggets. Mike Farmer, in reference to Pierre, he can't be all hush-hush when you ask about his team. Then we're giving out info about us, LOL, hashtag spies. Oh, Mike, you're funny. Something tells me Pierre in Dallas doesn't exactly have a direct dial line into the Joneses in the front office. Just say it. Everybody, good job on Twitter. Excellent job on the phones, as always. Off for the four-day weekend. Lance will be here on Tuesday, I hope, if he replies to my email. He's being very uncooperative. Otherwise, we'll get Patino to come in. I can get him to come here to do pretty much anything. He just loves being in the building. So stay tuned for that. Then we'll be back next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday as OTAs start. And we get you ready for organized team activities right here at the Quest Diagnostics Training Center. Thanks for joining us this morning, everybody. We'll see you on Tuesday morning on Giants.com. Have a great weekend. And once again, to all the veterans out there, thank you for your service. And our thoughts and prayers to all you families out there that you had people fall in service to this country. And a happy Memorial Day to you. And everybody remember those that have given their lives to give us the ability to host shows like this and call in and have the freedom to enjoy football the way that we do. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll see you on Tuesday. Be good.